Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Goosebumps, cashing a slip makes you grin, and above all, you love making your bookie cry? Then you're in the right place. The number one spot for premier betting advice and wild opinions, shared with a fan base like no other. Welcome home. This is the Punch List MMA Podcast. Here are your hosts, Dale Lippin and Trey Van Buskirk.
What is going on, Dream Team? It's your boy, Dale Lippin, in here. I'm flying solo tonight. Solo dolo, as the young kids like to say, by myself. Trey is in none other than Antifa hell, Portland, Oregon, doing it up big for his super liberal job. So congratulations, Trey. Do it up for all the blue hairs out there. It's a good time, man. So I'm by myself tonight. It's just me by myself. We had a good weekend. Fights were great. And look, man, I'm here. I got nothing but time on my hands. I got Christmas presents behind me. You know, it's just that time of year. Trey is exactly that. He's a little bit of a Grinch. I'm a little bit of a Grinch, but my dad was in town this weekend. My stepmom was in town. They brought Christmas gifts for the kids already because they won't be here for Christmas. So my office in the upcoming weeks will turn into a little Christmas wonderland as all of Santa and his elves start to fill up this area. So we're going to take advantage of that. But before we do anything else, if you were unable to take advantage of any of the turkey deals that Stay Classy Meats was offering for Thanksgiving, hams are still available. So be sure to go to Stay Classy Meats, use the promo code FIST, save 10%, big 7 to 9 pound ham, Berkshire ham, good to go there. I'll post some pictures up on Instagram later on, but took my dad to the Conflict MMA fights this weekend. Those of you that checked our Instagram, you saw a picture of me in cage with Anna Tool, interviewing her after her knockout victory. I think she knocked out her opponent. I believe it was in the third round, body shot knockout, vicious. So got the opportunity to hop in the cage with her, talk it up and chat it up for a little bit. But I'll post some pictures. My dad was there. First time ever seen a fight live. Took him, I think, 17 fights on the card, I believe 13 were finishes. So he only had to sit through 4 full fights. Everything else was happening quick. Conflict put on a fantastic show. Anyway, I say all that to say this. My dad comes downstairs. He's like, I don't know what to wear to a fight. Never been to a fight before, man. What do I wear? I said, Dad, just wear whatever, man. You're going to watch people punch people in the face. You do whatever you want. He comes downstairs. What's he have on? He's got on an Allegiance shirt. You can't make it up. The dude's a company man through and through. Made my heart happy to see him in it, but he wears an Allegiance shirt. We go, we watch people punch people in the face, drank a bunch of beer, got to enjoy some violence. It was my dad's 76, and we got to spend a good bit of quality time with each other. Probably the most solo time I think I've spent with my dad. Probably in 20 years, maybe more, probably the most time I've spent with him. And we got to doing something that I love. And I mean, he casually follows this show and casually follows the sport because it's something that his son's interested in, but, we got to go do it together. So it was cool. It was very cool. And, you know, Lord willing, I'll get to have a couple more or many more instances like that with him and, you know, so on and so forth with my son and maybe one day a grandson. You never know. All right. Anyway, let's get into it. This weekend, I had the pleasure and honor and privilege of working with yet another promotion here in the Lowcountry, Conflict MMA, where they had me come on board, just kind of help out a little bit. Now, Conflict's been around, admittedly, for this was their 49th show. They've been around for a while, right? They put on a quality product. If you are anywhere in the Southeast, I'm sure you're familiar with who they are, but they put on a very, very high quality show. This was their 49th go at it. They didn't need me, right? As far as production goes, I'm not the missing piece, if you will. But Jared Williams, I believe. I just said Williams. I'm pretty sure that's Jared's last name. Anyway, Jared was very generous and kind enough to have me come and just sort of see if I could find a place where I could interject myself. And I called a few fights for them, and then did, you know, some in cage work afterwards. Hopefully that footprint will increase in the next event. Conflict 50 is coming up March 5th. We've already spoken briefly. Looks like he is going to have the Punchless crew back in for that. Hopefully in a more involved role. But again, you got to get your feet wet first, right? You got to walk before you run. And he allowed us to do that. Ram FC is the other promotion that I've done some work for in the past. They're having an event on January 22nd. And that, if I'm not mistaken, is sort of mine for the taking. So I will be in full effect, cans, cage, the whole nine for that. It should be fun. I'm trying to convince Trey to come to South Carolina for the January 22nd show. If I can't get him for January 22nd, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to have to fly to San Diego and kidnap him or what, to get him to come here and work a show with me. So we'll try to get him for the March 5th show if we can't get him for the January 22nd show. Couple reasons why I think Trey doesn't want to meet me in person. One, I think he's shorter than I think he knows that I know that he's shorter than he looks, and he's got some sort of height dysmorphia. Two, he's not sure how to deal with somebody that's not from California. So maybe the fact that I'm a little rougher around the edges, it might shake off his chill California vibes. I'm not sure. Three, it might be the lack of kale and or organic quinoa readily available in my area. Because this isn't like an attempt at a dig. I don't live, my house is nice. My family is clean, beautiful, and normal. I have no, all outward appearance. There's no reason why you wouldn't want to come visit and hang out. And Lord knows we've spent several hundred hours talking to each other. So you're pretty sure, you should be pretty sure at this point that I'm not a complete weirdo. Everybody's got their little things, but I'm not going to like walk around my house listening to CCR with a pistol in my hand in the middle of the night while you're here. So chill out, man. Just show up. It's not that big a deal. Anyway, we got a great card this weekend. Oh, Dale, why is it a great card? It sucks. Here's the thing. We have to adopt an attitude of positivity around here, because to be honest with you, the last 2 weeks we've absolutely smacked. There's just no other way around it. And I understand, well, some of it's a little chalky. Okay, awesome. But if you throw those chalky plays into parlays, you're cashing slips, and you can't tell me that you're not, because you guys send me your slips. I see them in the DMs. I know what's up. I know that you're in there slapping. I know that you're making money. Now, whether it's because you needed us or not, doesn't to me, honestly. I mean, I hope you use our insight to try to make better picks, but if you don't, you do it on your own, and many of you are very talented, good on you. Absolutely good on you. But those of you that need a little push in the right direction, I hope that we can provide that for you. So let's say this. Recapping last week, I was incredibly confident in Ben Rothwell. In fact, I believe if I clip myself on the show, I said it's my most confident play of the night. I'm not really sure what to do with that information, because I didn't see the fights live, right? Because I had some other stuff going on, but I watched them back when I came back, because as you guys know, I try to watch every fight humanly possible. And I'm torn on whether or not I think that was an early stoppage by Herb Dean. I agree with Dana White, which is something I find myself saying way more than I like. Herb's got to stop touching people. You got to figure it out, man. He's either on the other side of the cage watching somebody get murdered, or he's in the way. I feel like I spent a good portion of my time very critical on referees, very critical on officiants in general, judges, things of that nature. I don't want to keep beating that horse. Herb Dean has been problematic for a while, and I've said this. I'll continue to say it. I know for a long time people thought Herb was the best in the game. I truly believe that Herb does not care anymore. I think he's reached a level of, I'm going to have this job. People think so highly of me that just there's really not much more he can do to show that he just isn't in it attention span wise anymore. He just doesn't seem to care. He really doesn't. It's disengaged. It's 2 weeks notice is what it is. It's I'm going on vacation in a week is what it is. Like that's when I'm getting ready to go on vacation, you know, that I'm Herb Dean at the office this week, waiting for Thanksgiving next week because I'm off work next week. Like I'm giving forth the same performance right now as Herb Dean. And I'm sure people that I work with watch the show, but that's just the way it is. When you're getting ready to go on vacation, that's the way you work. When you're giving your 2 weeks notice, which I'm not doing, but if you're giving your 2 weeks notice, that's what you do. Like Herb is just, it's weak, man. What did Rothwell in that fight was the way he fell. Like his body's reaction to getting rocked looked bad. We've seen Ben get stung before. We've seen Ben get rocked. And it's something about like a guy when he's like 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", whatever, when they get hurt, their body just reacts in a very exaggerated way because they're so large. You know, you look like one of those blow up things outside of a, car lot. This is the way the guy looked. But he did wrap up. He did wrap him up. He did have his head sort of tucked into the side. But, you know, maybe it was just delaying the inevitable. But if you're Herb, don't touch him, man. Just wait. Wait till he falls down. Dude, you know, just you're literally talking about another second and a half of reservation before that. Anyway, Max Holloway put on a banger of performance. I want to say this about Max Holloway, right? Because masterclass performance by Max Holloway. Looked great against Yair. Two takeaways from this. One, I know people have been talking about Max being hit a lot. That's something we've talked about on the show before, is that eventually the chin's going to go. Max is getting touched a lot. He's getting touched a lot more as his career progresses, as he slows down. Going to be interesting. I would like to think that that's eventually going to catch up with him. I just don't know who in the division is going to be the one that's going to catch up with, right? I hate to give him a lot of credit. I don't hate to, but I mean, Giga Chikadze could be the one to turn the lights out on Max. He could be. Volk didn't do it, but we haven't really seen one punch go to sleep power out of Volk lately. Aldo obviously isn't doing it. Ortega's not doing it. Cub couldn't do it. You know, he's not fighting Jeremy Stevens at this point in his career. Somebody at 155 is either going to have to do it. But if we're looking at featherweights that can do it, I think Giga might be the guy. Giga might be the guy. And I think it's going to come from a foot. I don't necessarily think that it's going to be a punch that gets it done. People say that Yair Rodriguez's stock goes up in that loss. I can get on board with that. I'll say this. Yair, for as much shit as I give him about being soft, displayed a lot of grit, displayed a lot of determination, and had a little bit of fight in him, which was cool. I like the idea where Max hit him and he shook his head like, and then called him forward. Max got one. Yair tried to get one back. Most of the fight, it was a tit for tat, a quid pro quo, if you will. I can get on board with that. I like that a lot. So I don't necessarily know from a skills perspective or title contention perspective that Yair proved anything to me in that fight, but I will say that he proved that he's got a little bit more grit and a little bit more heart than I thought he did. He seemed very diva-ish, and maybe outside of the cage he is very diva-ish, but he showed a lot of grit and determination in that fight. And I also realized by looking at the banner that I did not say when my dad was wearing his Allegiant shirt earlier that if you use promo code PUNCH, you can save 15% site-wide. So do all that. Anyway, here we go. I didn't do banners because I'm by myself and I'm not programming all of this in. That's what producer Jake is for. And producer Jake is on waivers and is doing something that's not here, and Trey is stuck in Portland. So it's just me by myself. So you're going to have to listen to me say the odds out loud, and then we will just go from there. First fight on the main card, Davy Grant taking on Adrian Yanez. Excuse me. Hold on a second here. Hold on one second. I got something. I just don't understand how this is even possible. If I'm using a program and I'm supposed to be streaming through the program, why does it have ads? Anyway, Davy Grant at 13-5 taking Adrian Yanez. Adrian Yanez at 14-3, and he's also the minus 300 favorite on Davy Grant coming back at the plus 240. Okay, let's talk about Adrian Yanez for a second. Adrian Yanez looked poor against Randy Costa until Randy Costa got a bloody nose and got a boo-boo on his face and then quit fighting. Not the best look for Adrian Yanez. That being said, Davy Grant, a little bit of a resurgence here. You know, I know with a guy with his record, he's 13-5. So you say, well, Dale, he's 18 fights in. How is this anything like a resurgence? Well, in my opinion, I feel like Davy Grant was on the verge of a pink slip. And then all of a sudden, he decided to start throwing it together and got himself, some performance. Really, I mean, not a performance of the night, but he really started putting some things together. I mean, if you look at his fight, again, when he lost to Damian Stasiak, and he lost to Manny Bermudez, I really thought Davy Grant was on his way out, right? But then he comes in and he beats Grigory Popov, who for a second I thought was going to be a Mongolian murderer, and that fizzled out. But then he comes back and he knocks out Martin Day and then knocks out Jonathan Martinez. And I was super high on Martinez in that fight. So you're looking at back-to-back knockout wins. So they book him against Chito Vera. Chito comes out and Cheetos him, right? That says he had previously had a win over Chito. They thought, oh, we'll just book him again. Negative. Chito comes out, avenges that, and we get it done, right? So he finds himself now where he's got to go up against another prospect in Adrian Yanez. And the thing with this is that even though Yanez is a minus 300, we got to find value. And I think we do it the most popular play is going to be Yanez by knockout, right? Yanez has got the boxing. He's got he's super slick. He's the up and coming prospect to watch. I would normally say, well, in instances like this, maybe we should avoid the knockout because maybe Yanez is going to come out and he's going to show us something different. But Davy Grant is going to leave himself in position to be touched the way that he needs to be to go to sleep. He throws everything with the arms. Everything is wide. Everything is looping. Everything comes from unorthodox angles. And a guy that is very on the center, very mindful of distance, keeps his head on the line, knows where his shots are at, and can continue to do the right things over and over again, like Adrian Yanez, he should see success as the fight progresses. I like Yanez to work the body here, and I think we might see either a knockout from a body shot or a knockout that's predicated by a body shot. Yanez does a very good job of breaking angle on the hips and digging with the hooks. I think that he could get inside some of those arm shots of Davy Grant, freeze him a little bit, and then start touching the body up. So we'll take Yanez and we'll take him inside the distance. And oh my gosh, my mouse is frozen, so I can't do anything. I don't have a mouse. Oh boy. I'll tell you what. There it goes. Now we're back. I'm telling you, there's some certain days where the devil works against you, man. And this is one of them. So we're taking Yanez. We're taking him inside the distance. We're going to take the fight inside the distance as a whole. All right. JoJo Calderwood, but she's not Calderwood anymore. She's just JoJo Wood because she married John Wood. So she's just JoJo Wood now at 15-6, taking on Talia Santos. Talia Santos at 18-1. Big favorite here in Talia Santos at minus 360, taking on JoJo at a plus 280. And I think it seems rare, but on a women's line, this seems accurate. JoJo just really hasn't been able to seem to find second gear for a while. she hasn't been able to really get it going. And Talia Santos has a ton of momentum. And if JoJo wants to make this a Muay Thai fight, it's going to end poorly for her. It really is. They did her no favors with this matchmaking. If she wants to win this fight, I think that the angle needs to be to get it to the ground. However, I don't know necessarily how effective she's going to be in the event that she does get it there. I don't love that look for her because she doesn't have the physical strength. One of the biggest knocks that I've had against Joanna Calderwood or Joanna Wood as she's gotten older, or as I've seen her career progress, let me rephrase that, as I've seen her career progress and I've seen her fight more, my viewership relationship has gotten older. She is not physically strong. She just isn't. Some women are physically, the opposite of that. They're just very physically strong and they're able to move the body around almost like a man. And Talia Santos has that. She is physically a specimen, right? She'll just muscle you. She muscled Roxanne Modafferi. She muscled Jillian Robertson. She muscled the meatball and Molly McCann. She will just do what she needs to do to impose her physicality on you. And if you come in like that little tiny purple Scottish flower from Braveheart, like Joanna Wood will, just like that purple flower in Braveheart, you're going to get smashed in between the canvas or the cloth and you're going to get put away. That's what I see happening here. I'm taking Talia Santos and I'm taking her as a parlay piece. Seems risque to put a women's fighter as a parlay piece, but I like Talia Santos in the spot. I just honestly, outside of a submission, I don't see where JoJo has a snowball's chance here. She might be able to wrap something up, an arm or something like that, if they go to the ground, but I can't bank on one method of victory. I'm going to take Talia Santos, parlay piece her. Minus 360, anchor her with a parlay. All right, Hani Yaya, 27-10-1, taking on Kung Ho Kang, whatever. My Asian names need tons of work. Anyway, Kang, 17-8. Like I said, Rani Yaya, 27-10-1, a wealth of experience on Rani Yaya. Hani Yaya, let me get that right. This is tough for me. Like the chat says here, Vieira and Kang are immortal locks, is what Cosmo's saying in the chat. I will say this. I do believe Kung Ho Kang to be the most handsome Asian man on the roster. I don't necessarily believe that he has talent to back that up, though. Hani Yaya, 27-10, is exactly that. He is just a wealth of experience, right? Losses in his career, at least the last 5 years or so, pretty tough to beat him, if we're being honest. You know, a loss to Tom Ninimaka, Joe Soto, and Ricky Simone. That's it. Those are the last three people to beat him since 2013. Before that, Chad Mendez beat him in 2011. So since 2011, you've lost to Chad Mendez, Tom Ninimaka, Joe Soto, and Ricky Simone. That's it. That's pretty serious, man. Now, my thing with that is that they've really not given him anybody to do anything more with, right? Wins over Johnny Bedford, Matthew Lopez, Michinori Tanaka, Luke Sanders, and Ray Rodriguez in that time period. It's not like he's out there fighting a murderer's row. I mean, we got to keep it real with Hani. He's not out there just, you know, doing it up big dog style. That being said, he's got a stiff test here. And I know he's been fighting in the promotion for the better part of 10 years now, but I believe that Kung Ho Kang might be his stiffest test to date. You know, a loss to Ricardo Ramos, which was a split decision, so I'm not going to hold that against him. But a loss prior to that to Chico Camus. And then, you know, that's really kind of it. And that, you know, that fight was back in 2013. So my thing, if you're Kang is or Kong or however you want to say it, is that he's not incredibly active. We appear to fight, you know, once or twice a year. We had a 4-year layoff between 2014 and 2018. So we essentially just kind of took four years, I believe, at that time. We were doing that mandatory military service and some other things. So he's got a lot going on. Hasn't been incredibly active, but he's coming back and he's got Ronnie Yahya knocking on his door. His losses before were by decision. He's only been submitted once, I believe, in his career. And that was way back when Yahya was making his promotional debut in the UFC back in 2011. So it's been a minute since he's lost by submission. This is an interesting stylistic matchup. If you're going to take Ronnie or Hani, take him by sub. He's not going to win a decision. He will go for broke, dead. He'll gas himself out going for a sub. He will not win a decision. Hani Yahya by decision is not what you want. You want him by sub if you're going to play him at all. Just screw the plus money, minus money, whatever, because it's a pick 'em right now. Just go Yahya sub. If you're going to take... if you're going to take Kung Yo Kong, take him by knockout or by decision. Just give yourself the plus money alternative. If you think he's going to win, you want to just do a money line, sure, go for it. Like I said, it's coming at a pick 'em right now. I would just, in my opinion, I think that Hani will kill himself trying to get a sub. So you play Kung Ho by finish, and you play Hani by submission, or you play an inside the distance play. You can get more bang for your buck here than just going straight up money line play, because anything can happen. So why not go for the plus money and, you know, sort of hedge against yourself? So my opinion. All right, next fight on the main card, co-main event. Michael Chiesa taking on Sean Brady. Sean Brady 14-0. Michael Chiesa 18-5. Chiesa is a +135 dog against Sean Brady at a -160. Sean Brady is one of my new favorite fighters, prospects to watch. I think I am absolutely fascinated by this kid and the skills that he possesses. You've heard me say it before. I like Sean Brady. I like Gavin Tucker. I like Ilya Topuria. I like Movsar Evloev. There's quite a few guys coming up right now that I really enjoy watching. I went rather large on Chiesa his last time out against Luque, and that did not fare well for your boy. That's not what I expected. I did not expect Chiesa to get Chiesa'd. That was unsettling. I didn't really appreciate that. I feel like he's in a good bounce back spot here, and he's got some veteran experience and big show experience when it comes down to it over a guy like Sean Brady. I just, with a guy like Brady, my thing is that he doesn't talk much. So he doesn't give you a lot to go off of mentally. I'm not sure, one, what his fight IQ is like, you know, how cerebral he is, how he approaches fights. Two, when a guy doesn't talk a lot, it's hard to figure out motivation. Like, what gets Sean Brady up in the morning? Like, has anybody heard him talk? Like, his plan is like, I want to be world champ. Like, is that his thing? Like, is he just like, I'm calling out, I want top 10 guys, I want top 5 guys. Like, is that Sean Brady's motivation? Like, is that what I'm looking at when I see this guy? Like, what's he approaching? What fuels him in the dogfight, right? When Chiesa is doing smother, wrestle death, what's motivating my man? Like, do we know? That's what makes me nervous with a guy like Sean Brady, is I don't know what lights his fire. Because Chiesa is going to come out, he's going to try to make it gritty, try to make it ugly. Although, with Chiesa, Chiesa really likes getting dressed up and being on TV. Chiesa really likes talking. Chiesa really likes the way that he sounds. So is a guy like Michael Chiesa, who is fairly intelligent, has to realize that he's probably in a very crowded welterweight division, several fights from several killers away from a title shot, despite being a little bit on the younger side. Do we think if we're Michael Chiesa, like, fighting, like, I'm going to be world champion one day? Or do we think I can put on a couple fan-friendly fights and then I can move full-time I could try to get one of those desk spots? Like, what's the motivation there if you're Michael Chiesa? How he has to approach this fight is exactly this. He cannot stand and bang. Well, and this is typical for any Chiesa fight. He cannot stand and bang with Sean Brady at all. He needs to try to go wrestle his way through Sean Brady's jiu-jitsu. Like, he has to use offensive wrestling to move to jiu-jitsu in order to try to negate Brady's striking and Brady's jiu-jitsu. If he can't do that, I believe this will be a bad night for Chiesa. I'm not overly sold on the looks that Brady's gotten. That's really got me falling in love with him in this spot. I think that Chiesa could pose some problems if he comes out there and fights like a wily veteran, right? Like, really fights like a vet, presses him against the cage, makes him carry that frame, really works him, works the seatbelt, takedowns. If he can really make Sean Brady work, make him use that frame, I think that he could pose some severe problems for Sean Brady. If you're Sean Brady, you got to touch Michael Chiesa, right? You got to hit him. You got to make it ugly, in the sense that you need to let Chiesa know that the fight won't be easy, and you have to threaten him. You have to threaten him by hurting him early, or at least touching him, stop a takedown or two, and let him know that he's in for a fight. Make Chiesa question whether or not he still has what it takes to compete with the young up-and-comers, right? Because right now, Chiesa is viewing himself as the old lion, the old guard. And if Sean Brady can make him question that, he can get him to check out of the fight. Chiesa's coming off getting choked, and he doesn't like that. So we'll see what happens. As it stands right now, on Tuesday night, I'm leaning Sean Brady in this fight, which goes kind of against my normal play of going on, you know, leaning on the wrestlers. But Chiesa might be in I need to see you win territory before I can bet you again. And as such, I'll fade him until it ends up costing me money. So it's where I'm at right now. We'll see where I land on Saturday. But as it stands right now, that's where I'm at. And my mouse is not working yet again. I know you guys can hear me clicking it because I'm trying to get it to respond and it's just not doing it. I'm not entirely sure what's going on. Getting pretty frustrated with it. Oh, there we go. We're back. Yes. Excellent. Good times. All right. Main event. Ketlin Vieira at 11-2, taking on Misha Tate at 19-7. Vieira is a -125 favorite. Misha Tate coming back at +105. Slight underdog for Misha. Now, to go back to Mr. Cosmo's comment in the chat, like he said earlier, where he's talking about Kang and Vieira being locks. I disagree more so on this female side. Right now, do I think that Misha Tate looked good her last fight out? No, sir, I do not. But it's about reps for Misha, right? For Misha, it's about activity. She's got to be active. She's got to be in there sweating. She's got to be in there doing more. So I love the idea that this is another fight within the calendar year for her. A win over Marion Renault, not it, right? We understand Marion Renault, 9-7 as a pro. It is what it is. But Ketlin isn't exactly the pinnacle of activity herself, right? We had a loss to Yana Kunitskaya earlier in this year. And then in 2020, the only win that she had was her only fight of the year against Jara Eubanks. Then we go to 2019. She only fought once in 2019. Which was a fight against Irene Aldana. And then we go to 2018. She only fought once in 2018 against Kat Zingano. So Ketlin Vieira is not exactly out there getting reps in either. This is kind of two ladies that don't fight very often. I know Misha had a couple kids, did the retirement thing, did the ONE FC what was she, the VP of athlete development or whatever it is that she was doing over there. They probably just brought her over there to be pretty. Although I don't know what those positions do. So maybe I don't know what her play over there with one was. I think it was athlete development, and one is a fantastic organization. So by all accounts, it seemed that she was doing a good job. But she got the competitive fire to come back, and she did, and she got a win over a veteran in Marion Renault, who announced prior to that it was going to be her retirement fight. So, yeah, I mean, a win's a win, but she's fighting twice in a calendar year, which is more than we can say for Ketlen Vieira. I would say approach Vieira as a lock with a little bit of reservation, right? Women's underdogs have cooled off a little bit. We had a great run there for a few months where women's underdogs were consistently cashing. But the tide has kind of turned in that, right? I don't know if Mercury's in retrograde now or what the heck's going on, but things are starting to even out a little bit. And we're getting a former champ, second fight in the year, at plus money, very, very close to plus money. And in combat sports, that essentially means that Vegas can't figure out what they're doing. Money lines in combat sports aren't like money lines in football or basketball, for that matter. I would say anything up to a minus 180, minus 200 is still, you can still lose that fight quite a few ways. So approach with caution is all I'm saying for the Vieira play. Personally, I'll be on Misha Tate. I don't see Ketlen Vieira enough to feel confident calling her a lock over anybody. And that's not a knock on her in that instance. It's just, I just don't see her enough in that, right? I remember seeing her against Sajara Eubanks and thinking, okay, that was like a lunchbox performance. I remember her beating Sarah McMahon because I was really high on Sarah McMahon for a while. And I was like, okay, if we can beat Sarah McMahon, if we can choke Sarah McMahon out, okay, that you have some skills. But outside of that, man, she's either it's decision city. So maybe the play for this fight is we'll just go fight goes the distance or over. We'll take the over on rounds, which I believe is it 4.5, maybe 3.5. Hold on. Stand by. I'll look. This is why we need producer Jake, but it is what it is. Let me find the over under on rounds real quick. I think we'll take by decision, maybe. Or fight goes the distance, one of the two. I'm cool with that. I don't mind that at all. Yeah, it's at 4.5. Under 4.5, is it plus 130? Over 4.5, is it a minus 160? So Vegas is thinking the same thing I'm thinking. They're right in line with me. They're saying, we think this fight's going to go over. It's a minus 160 is not enough for me to think it's a trap. So, yeah, I'll probably play over 4.5. Because Ketlen doesn't seem to be able to do much other than go to decision. Honestly, I think Misha has a better chance of winning inside the distance. Supposedly, if I remember correctly, there was an idea there for a while that Ketlen Vieira had good hands. So maybe if she's going to hurt Misha, she's going to do it early. But Misha's got a weird way of getting some subs in there or getting that cumulative ground and pound death by 1,000 cuts kind of deal. So maybe Misha Tate in the latter rounds. She did knock out Marion Renault ground and pound in the third round. So maybe she pushes it. Maybe she stretches it out a little bit. I don't know. Take Misha Tate. Maybe take the over. That's about it. I can't trust Vieira. I don't see her enough. All right. First fight on the prelims. Yeah, first fight on the prelims. Let me wet the whistle here. All right. First fight of the prelims. Luana Pinheiro at 9-1, taking on Sam Hughes. Sam Hughes at 5-3, taking on Pinheiro at 9-1. I've got a weird... Luana Pinheiro is a mystery to me, if I'm being honest, right? So, if you've never seen Luana Pinheiro fight, imagine, those of you that have watched our show for a long time, imagine if Haley Cowan was Brazilian. That's what Luana Pinheiro looks like. She doesn't fight like Haley, though, where Haley is essentially equal parts physicality and technicality Pinero's just kind of like, I don't really know. She's got good hands and she can submit you too, but she's not very physically strong. Like, she's got knockouts and she's got submissions on her record, but they tend to come against girls who she can kind of bully. And when she gets bullied, she doesn't really like it. If you're wondering when the last time you saw her fight was, it was when she fought Randa Marcos, and Marcos hit her with the up kick. And there was like this very elongated, drawn out, exasperated reaction to the up kick. And ultimately they called the fight and gave Pinero the win, which was wild to me. So she's back, and she finds herself in a minus 400 spot against Sam Hughes. Plus 310 for Sam Hughes. Now, I don't understand this, and I'll tell you why. I don't know what you see from Pinero that makes you think that she should be a minus 400 against anybody. And it's just the principle of the thing. It's just literally the principle of the matter. I don't know, understand how you assign this woman a minus 400 spot. Did she knock out Stephanie Frosto in the contender series? Yep, she certainly did. Right. But her last fight was not going her way, and she won from an illegal strike. So now you have her back and you put her at a minus 400 spot. Okay. Well, Dale, she's going up against Sam Hughes. I understand that. What's wrong with Sam Hughes? Well, a couple of things, right? Sam Page is on the wrong side of the 20s for only having 8 professional fights, and she's 5'5 and doesn't have much of a reach at all. That being said, she's also coming off back-to-back losses to Loma Luke Boomy and Tisha Torres. But Tisha Torres has kind of turned it around a little bit. Her last win came in the LFA against Danielle Hinley. But before that, she lost due to an inverted triangle choke. Oh, my gosh. Shout out Jorge Masvidal for going purple with that one. To Vanessa Dimopoulos. So she's not exactly beating killers, and anybody that she's fighting, that's UFC level talent. And I do believe that Vanessa, despite mixed results so far in her UFC run, Tisha Torres and Loma Luke Boomy, at least Loma and Tisha, for the sake of the point I'm making here, are UFC level talents. So I believe that Sam Hughes is closer than a plus 300 here. And I believe that Pinero has no right being a minus 400. Perhaps I'll be proven wrong. She'll go out there and start Sam Hughes, but I'm going to bet against her for here. I'm going to take a minus 300 dog to open the show. Why not? Curtain jerker, empty apex, two women, nothing to lose, similar skill sets. It's a coin flip as far as I'm concerned, because neither one of these women, respect to them as athletes, have shown me anything that respects, makes me respect and feel confident on either side of that line. So that being said, I'm going to open up the show with a little bit of spice, something nice. Plus 310 on Sam Hughes. Why not? I've got no small sprinkles, baby. Small sprinkles. All right. Let's see here. Next fight on the main card. Yeah, man. Definitely should have heard the audio on this guy. I'll go Shylon. Boy, that's a good one. Somebody want to type out the phonetic for it in the chat for Shylon Nurdenbeka? Nurdenbeka? Nurdenbeck? Nurdenbeck? Let's go to Nurdenbeck. Nurdenbeck. Shylon Nurdenbeck. 19-7, taking on Sean Soriano at 14-7. Man, what a name, right? Golly. My man, I'm going to go with Shylon for right now, okay? Nickname Wolverine. Built like a brick shithouse. Got beat up by Josh Coulibal. Now, the thing with Coulibal, right? And I got issues with Coulibal. Coulibal came in and looked like absolute warmed up dog poo against Jalen Turner. Okay. And then comes in and puts on a dominant performance against Shylon. which leaves me with no accurate barometer on how good this guy is, because I can't figure out how good Coolabao is. And then he comes in and he fights Sean Soriano. Well, the thing with Sean Soriano is that Sean Soriano is one of those guys where he trains with straight killers and, for all intents and purposes, seems to be one of those guys that's super good in the gym, but it doesn't necessarily translate once he gets under the bright lights. So they brought him in short notice. He fought Christos Yagos. And then he got choked out by Christos Yagos. Prior to that, he looked pretty good. He looked pretty decent, you know? But you're talking about a guy that had a good run to start his career and at one point dropped 6 out of 7 or 5 out of 6, something like that. And then kind of became, I don't want to call him a club level, but kind of like just a club level slash just gym fighter, right? And seemed to be doing very good, helping out with the striking coaching duties, Black Zillions and whatever they are now. I can't remember that team's changed names a million times. Was it Samford MMA now? Is that what they are? What freaking gym is he out of? I can't remember. Anyway, doesn't matter for this, for my point here. He just sort of adopted the coach's mentality, right? So with that coaching opportunities comes a lot of things. It comes the opportunity to disengage and inspect and get introspective on the game, the fight game as a whole, and your techniques and your approaches to things. I like him in the spot. I think he might have a good opportunity here. He just can't get out muscled. Soriano has the skills within him to beat Shylan. I really believe that he does. He just has to actually follow through on it. And what he can't do is gas out, right? He has to be able to execute. He is the favorite here. While a little overpriced at the -280 spot, I think he's justifiably the favorite. I'll take him here. Strictly a money line, just to say, you know, because you're asking me to pick a winner and loser, I'm going to take him. Not something, you know, that I absolutely love, and I'm not putting him on any parlays, and he won't be in any sort of DraftKings lineup for me. So I will say that. All right, next fight on the main or on the prelim, Cody Durden, 11-3-1, taking on Kailing Aori, or Aori Kailing, 18-8. This is a fight that is on my radar for fight of the night. -155 if you're on the Durden side. Aori is at the +130. This is an earmark for fight of the night, right? This is one where both guys are going to come out ready to inflict damage on the other. Cody Durden is getting the favorite nod here. He lost via triangle choke to our boy Jimmy the Brick Flick his last time out. This was in December of last year, so nearly a year since we've seen Mr. Durden fight. And if I remember correctly, that fight, it was close to a pick'em, and you know, Durden was able to hit him with that triangle choke. I don't think that Aori is going to present the same creativity to produce a result similar to that. Last time we saw Kailing out, he was beaten by Jeff Molina. Jeff Molina stepped in and looked like a boss, and nobody was expecting that. I know we weren't. I know I wasn't. I was all over Aori in that fight, thinking, oh, this dude stepping up on short notice out of Krause's camp isn't going to do shit. And Jeff Molina went out there and put on a heck of a fight. And I think that was a fight of the night award for both those guys. I'm going to take Aori here at plus money. I think Durden's path to victory is the wrestling. I think Aori's path to victory is the hands. If he can stop the takedowns, if he can make Durden work, if he can gas him out a little bit, I think he's got more gas in the tank power-wise. As the fight progresses, he can get it done. So I'm going to take the small plus money on Aori here, and we'll see what we can do. Let's see here. Terrence McKinney at 11-3, taking on Firas Ziam. Or Ziam's at a 12-3. Terrence McKinney at 11-3. Okay. This is a fight that confuses me, because I was pretty certain that Terrence McKinney destroyed his knee after the quick knockout of Matt Frivola. Like, he did the Frivola knockout, jumped off the cage, landed weird on the knee, and it seemed like, for all intents and purposes, like that knee was a mess. And that was back in June. But here we are, 6 months later, not even 6 months later, and we're fighting again, and we're going up against Firas Siam. Now, my thing with Firas is that he, when he has looked good, he's looked very good, right? He looked very good against Jamie Mullarkey, who's on a little bit of a run. Majority decision win over Luigi Vendramini, who I'm still on the fence about, but lost. He lost to Don Madge. I don't think you should be losing to Don Madge. My opinion, if you have any staying power in this promotion, you don't lose. You should not lose to Don Madge. And all respect to Don Madge, he's one of those guys that's a measuring stick, right? And I don't know. I'm gonna take McKinney here, based on, you know, well, he wrestled in high school, okay, but I'm just gonna take McKinney here because I'm just not entirely sure how I feel about Firas. I really don't want to bet on this fight at all. It's a pick'em. I might just avoid it, to be honest with you. Gun to my head, I'll take McKinney. I'm not confident in it, though. I'm not confident in it. Output-wise, Firas throws more. I think the wrestling advantage, takedown advantage, goes to McKinney. Just depends on how they want to fight. Depends on how they want to fight each other. But I'll probably go McKinney, but I don't know if I want to touch it. We'll see on Saturday. I'm not sure yet. All right. Let's see here. Jonathan says in the chat, Tate outlasts her. I'm leaning on a parlay with Tate, Santos, and Yanez. I can get on board with that. And if you're the hedging type, that's a good one to do it because you're hedging on the last fight of the night, and you can take Ketlin at very small minus money, so you don't have to put up as much to win it back. So yeah, that's a great opportunity to make some money there. Sure. If you're the hedging type. If you're not the hedging type, you can still make a lot of money there, because I like all three of those plays, as you've heard. That's a good one. What's that come back at? Is that your Yanez Santa? What do you like it? Minus 240? What's that come at? Put it in the chat if you care enough to share. Minus 180, minus 240. What's that come back at? Somewhere in that range, probably, depending on your book. All right. Loma Luke Boomy at 6-2. Loopy Godinez at 6-2 as well. Godinez coming back at a minus 165 favorite. My girl Loopy just wants to stay active. I don't know if it's in her best interest to stay as active as she is. But she wants to get back in there, right? Minus 165, taking on Loma at a plus 140. One thing you got to be wary of with these quick turnarounds is the body recovering, right? Are you getting the adequate rest time in between? I think that she likes the idea of taking this fight on short notice because Loma Luke Boomy is going to give her the type of fight that she wants, right? Loopy wants to throw hands. We've seen in her last two outings, right? We had the armbar win over Silvana Gomez Juarez, where she was touching her up with the hands and then ultimately got the armbar finish. But then she came out and she tried to do that against Luana Carolina, and Luana was just too big for her, right? Just way too big of a woman. Lost the split decision earlier this year to Jessica Penne in a fight that I thought she won. So yeah, we'll see if we can go 2-2 in 2021 betting on Loopy Godinez. I'm going to take Loopy here again. We'll see if we can go 2-2 with her. She's got good hands. She's got good submissions. Loma's got to use that Muay Thai. And wait a second. How is it? This is what I don't understand. If you can log in, for those of you who don't know what's going on, the chat from the Punchlist account in the chat says, oh God, here comes the love for Loopy. If you can chat you can be in the show. I'm under the impression that you're in Portland and you're unable to do the show. If you can chat, you can be in the show, Trey. So get in here. Or if it's producer Jake, start putting the tickers up at the bottom so I can so I can do it. Leo Lopez says, I think Loma gets it done. Interesting. Interesting. Is that logic based on we think it's going to be primarily a stand-up battle? Gets done as far as gets the win plus money, or do we think she knocks her out? How do you think that plays out? Here's the thing, right? Yeah, here comes the love for Loopy. The love for Loopy comes for this is she's aggressive. I like women's fighters that are aggressive. I don't want every once in a while a tactician like a Valentina Shevchenko is fun to watch, right? But if we're being honest, most women are they're specialists, right? Like I'm very good at one particular thing. I'm very good at throwing hands. I'm very good at judo. I'm very good at jujitsu. I'm very good at wrestling, whatever. And most women lack violence within them, right? It's very difficult to find a woman that possesses sheer violence inside their body. Come on, man. I'm trying to make a point here. I'll put it up on the screen so people can see. This is from Trey. Amanda Nunes, Valentina, Joanna, Whaley. I won't even say that Rose has it. Very few women just possess that level of animosity capable of dark violence. And Loopy goes out there and tries to separate you from consciousness. Macy Barber's another one that tries to separate you from consciousness. There are a couple women out there that really, really want to hurt you. And some of them look, you know, will do it with a smile on their face. Yeah. And I'll play on that. I'll play on that for right now. So Trey says that I'm naked, scared, and alone. Yep. Yep. It's how you came into this world, bro. Hopefully it's not how you go out. So, all right. I also just love that this dude is sitting in here chatting, but not actually in the stream. I can't with you, bro. I just can't. It's just, oh my gosh. Hoffa Garcia taking on Natan Levy. Levy at 6-0. Hoffa Garcia at 12-2. Oh man. Garcia to -125. Levy to +105. And I think that plus money on Natan is coming from the experience on Hoffa's side, right? Hoffa has shown himself to be just a dark, gritty, grizzled veteran. And he's going up against a guy that's super flashy. And here's the thing, right, is that I like Hoffa Garcia a lot, but he gets hit. And Levy is such a creative, fun, energetic shot in the arm that I think he's going to come out there and try to do something flashy. And if he's successful, I mean, it's going to be amazing. That's what he's counting on. But if you're Garcia, you need to lean on your expert veteran experience to not fall into that, right? Like save the spinny shit for the gym. Go out there, press him against the cage, dirty box him, drag him out, make him work. But if you let him go out there and you let him touch you up and you let him start hitting you, yeah. If you let him touch you up, you're going to have a bad day. Trey just texted me and said, I only had 5 minutes to jump in and watch. Now he's got to go out to dinner with his boss. Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. Anyway, I miss the big guy or the little guy. I maybe it's the little guy. I don't know. I'm going to put a poll out how tall we think Trey is. Not that I'm like some gigantic man, but I'm not, you know, I just want to see what you think. Okay. How do I feel about this? Garcia? Probably going to avoid this one. Maybe we'll YOLO a Levy bet. We'll see. All right. Pat Sabatini taking on Tucker Lutz. Tucker Lutz at 12-1. Sorry. Taking on Pat Sabatini at 15-3. Sabatini, Philadelphia kid, man. I mean, look, as a guy that was born and raised in the greater Pittsburgh metropolitan area, inherently I'm supposed to hate everybody from Philadelphia. And for the most part, Philadelphia lives and resides in the darkest recess of my butthole. I don't like that city at all. I don't like their little silly accent that they have. But that being said, Pat Sabatini's been putting in work, man. Been putting in work. Came in, humbled Tristan Connolly, which is what he should have done. Then comes out and he heel hooks Jamal Emmers. He's got a tough test in front of him in Tucker Lutz. My thing with Tucker Lutz, he's like a poor man's Jason Witt. They just kind of they look pretty much the damn same. If I'm Tucker Lutz, I want to know where my dad was at right around the time Jason Witt was conceived, because these two dudes look almost identical, even down to the tattoos. All that to say this. He's got a win over Kevin Aguilar, and then in the Contender Series, he's got that win over Sherrod Blackledge. I'm not impressed with Tucker Lutz. I do enjoy the nickname Top Gun. I can get on board with that. Highway to the Danger Zone for sure. But he's exactly doing that. He's going right into the Danger Zone, and I'm afraid that Pat Sabatini is going to make him his goose, and he's going to take him out. So as of right now, I'm going to go ahead and take Pat Sabatini. Pat Sabatini is a minus 135 favorite, one of the only close minus monies that I'm going to take on this entire card, and I'm going to take him at minus 135. I'm going to go ahead and take Pat Sabatini here. I do, in fact, enjoy him quite a bit. Okay, top to bottom, we'll run through these real quick. Again, these are just general leanings. Saturday may reflect differently. If you don't see me post or say anything different on Saturday, just go ahead and assume that these are my money line plays. We will see. I don't know how long Trey's in Portland for, if he's ever coming back. Maybe he'll find himself some new granola girl there and not shave that doesn't shave her armpits, and he'll start rubbing patchouli oil on his neck. Next, I don't know what Trey's got going on. You know, I doubt it. I doubt it, but you never know what this guy's going to do. He's an absolute wild card. So anyway, Pinedo and Sam Hughes. Sam Hughes, plus 310. Screw it. Let her rip, tater chips. Sean Soriano and Shy Lin. I'm going to take Sean Soriano. Kyling Aori, I'm going to take him over Cody Durden. Terrence McKinney, Firas Ziam, I'm going to lean McKinney for right now. Loma Luke Boonmi over Lupi Godinez, I'm on Godinez. Natan Levy taking on Hoffa Garcia, I'm leaning Levy at the moment. Might go veteran experience with Garcia, we shall see. Pat Sabatini, Tucker Lutz, I'm on Sabatini and fairly confident in that. Adrian Yanez over Davey Grant, I like Yanez. He's going to work the body, which will open up the head. If you're going to build a house, start with the foundation. Joanne Calderwood or JoJo, but she's not Calderwood anymore. I got to get away from that. She's just JoJo Wood now. Taking on Talia Santos, I'm taking Talia Santos. Hani Yaya versus Kung Ho Kang, I'm taking... Oh, boy, this one's freezing me. Honestly, a double play here. I'm going to take Yaya by sub and Kang by knockout, just to give myself some plus money. Hopefully I'll just minimal losses there. Kiesa, Sean Brady. As of right now, I'm leaning Sean Brady. Misha Tate, Ketlin Vieira. I'm going to lean on Misha Tate. So let's see here. Mark says that he thinks Trey's 5'5". 5'5", bro. 5'5", for real? Golly. My wife's 5'9". So if Trey's 5'5", again, no disrespect. I got a buddy that's 5'5". Shout out to Brian Wadsworth. You know, I got 5'5 people in my circle. Sometimes you need them 5'5ers, man. 5'5ers are scrappy. You know, they're low center of gravity win. I mean, anybody who's played football, pad level's important. So you need them 5'5ers on your team. But man, I don't know. I feel like we put off big guy energy on this podcast. So I don't know if Trey gets off the Delta flight, you know, Delta 1371 from San Diego to Charleston, South Carolina, and my man's 5'5", might have to cancel the show. Might have to replace him. I don't know. Maybe size five shoes. I don't believe so. I mean, first of all, I don't believe Trey wears shoes. I believe he wears flip-flops everywhere, if he wears shoes at all. You don't get your hair with that much salt water in it if you wear shoes all the time. So I can appreciate that about him. And all of this shit talking just basically comes from the fact that he's not here and he's not saying stuff like he thinks that all the fighters from Georgia are from the state of Georgia. So if he was here, I wouldn't have to go out of my way to pick at him this is where we find ourselves. All right, you guys have listened to me ramble on by myself. Thongs down here. That's right, thongs. I forgot thongs. That's what you guys call flip-flops or sandals. Anyway, you guys have listened to me talk by myself, to you for an hour and 3 minutes now. I appreciate you all greatly. We are moving and shaking. I'm just going to be honest with you. At this point, I have reservations on whether or not we can get shirts out to you before Christmas. We've got to get them out now. Like, we've got to get the pre-order now. We got to have the pre-order done by the first week of December if we want to get them to you by Christmas. So my pledge to you for this week, two things. One, I will light a fire beneath Roy and Trey to try to get the first batch of merch out to you guys this week, at least released on Allegiance's website so you guys can look at it and get the pre-orders going. And then two, we are going to have a winning weekend this week. We were going to end the year strong, and going into next year, we will have a similar, albeit different, layout for the show. First season, if you guys are familiar, we just kept an overall record between Trey and myself. And then this year we just kind of kept it easy breezy. I mean, it was fucking COVID, so nobody really felt like dealing with it. So we were just trying to make plays, have fun. Admittedly, this season has been slightly less successful because we've been really cute on stuff. But we'll go back to our winning ways. Not that we ever really deviated from them that greatly. And then last but not least, I guess it'll be three promises or maybe just an idea for this third one. Our episode 100 is right around the corner. So for episode 100, we want to hear from you guys as far as what you want from us. Like, what do you want us to do for that episode? What do you want us to do moving forward? Do you want us to have guests on? Do you want us to do the interview thing? Because Trey and I kind of like got away from that, but like Calvin Cater's got a fight coming up. We can get Calvin back on the show. You know, Drew is always willing to come on. We can get Johnny Case back. We can get Haley. We can go after bigger dogs. You know, I mean, Cejudo's got his own things going on, which thoughts and prayers to Cejudo's sister who's battling stage 4 cancer he just announced today. You know, I know it's easy to get wrapped up in the idea of the character of somebody, like the character they portray. But cancer is a real thing and it sucks and it's miserable. And as somebody who has dealt with that in their family and is currently dealing with that in their family, my thoughts and prayers go out to Henry Cejudo and his family and his sister. But anyway, it's what you guys want. Like, what do you want us to do in this new season moving forward? And what do you want us to do for episode 100? I mean, we're open to whatever. Yeah, we'll see what we can do. And all right, so what am I doing for you? We're going to light the fire for the merch. Yeah, we're going to light the fire for the merch. We're going to do episode 100. And then I promise you something else too. I'll have to go back and listen to it. I've been punched in the head too many times, man. The brain cells are fried. All right. I love you guys. Be good to each other. And we'll see everybody on Saturday. Oh, winning record this weekend. Duh, of course. It's not even a promise. That's an oath. Be good to each other, guys.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.